Hey, yo, we about to tear it up. Hey, yo.
Break for break, get down.
This right here is how we do it. Break it down.
It's the Breaking Atoms podcast. We break things down to the very last compound. My name is Sumit, a.k.a. the potty mouth of the South.
And my name is Chris Mitchell, a.k.a. the actual factual.
Yeah, boy. Listen, man, we've got the plug.
The plug.
We got the plug, bro.
The plug of all plugs.
I don't even know how this has come about, but I've just started calling our guest the plug.
Who else did you call the plug?
I don't know. There's someone else. I can't remember. Someone's a plug. I can't remember. I call many people the plug. And it's
right,
because
You're crew hopping, bruv. You're a big friend.
Yeah, what it is I'm overcompensating for the fact that I want to be the plug, but I am not.
Okay.
So this is my way of doing it.
You're honest?
I'm honest, but this is a really interesting episode because now we're going into a different realm of music. We're stepping behind the scene once again, but this time we're talking to someone who has been part of tour management, music management, and has worked with a wealth of artists up and down, from underground to people on top of their game, and seen people who've gone from underground to the top of their game.
Wealth of artists, experience, you get me?
This is important because I think for what we're trying to do and the platform we're trying to create, which we always bang on about, but I'm going to bang on once again, it's about
bang on information sharing.
Yeah, it's information sharing, and it's ensuring that people understand what it takes to be in this industry from people who are doing it, who are, you know, pushing the needle, who are contributing to the culture. And Max is someone who is doing that and continues to do that. So it was really interesting to hear his story, his entry. He paid his dues. He is now super successful in what he does. He's now managing artists. And that, I think, is a wonderful story to tell.
Yeah, I agree. There's nothing more to be said, bro.
No. This is good. I'm so glad we reconnected after all this time. I mean, he had to remind me, bro. Emilio Rojas.
Yeah, bro. Emilio Rojas was outside, bro. Like, I swear there was interest to sign him to Maybach.
Yes, I think so. I think he had a lot of interest to Label, because
he did.
That was the.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that was the power of the blog era and how you could build a buzz, and he did very well.
He was all over. I remember, Underground Head, he did a lot of stuff with M Phases, Ill Mind, Superstition. He was all... I remember when they used to call him Psycho Rax 1.
Wow.
That was his first name. Then it was Rax 1 and then Emilio Rojas.
Yeah, man. He took me back.
Donnie Goins and Amanda, the blog era. Listen.
I used to talk to Donnie Goins on a daily basis.
Let's find him. But we'll talk about that off air.
Yeah. I used to talk to him on a daily basis. But no,
back
Max.
To the plug.
Back to the plug. We go way back, and it's super. I mean, it's really good now we have the platform of the podcast and how we're moving, that we can reconnect with people. And you've met him as well.
I'm gonna be racking my brain tonight thinking where I met him. And I know, bro, it was with you.
Yeah, I don't smoke weed, but my memory is hazy at times. So, but no, look, this is Max, and his story is wonderful, and he's got so much to offer still. And I can't wait to see what he does next. So this is Max, Breaking Atoms. Check it out. It's another special episode of the Breaking Atoms podcast. Today we have a friend of the show, someone that I've known for a very long time, not had a beer with ever. He's mad at me for that still, even though I don't drink, but I will drink with him. Maybe some Douce or
Look
some rum.
Guy,
I'll definitely
man.
Drink with him. But yeah, come on, Douce and that. But we have someone who is, I'm going to call him the plug.
He's
the plug because he has worked his way through this industry, working with some of the biggest names, people on the rise. He's a music manager. He's a tour manager. He's a good guy. He's friends of friends. We're talking to the one, the only, Max Robin. How you doing, brother? How are you, man? All the way in France, bro. We're taking it global now.
And a Liverpool fan.
There you go.
Okay, that's the end of this episode. I see what's going on.
Thank you guys for having me tonight. It's a pleasure, you know. I've got to catch a few episodes already, you know, and you know, it's beautiful to hear so many of these stories and the OGs to like talk about like hip hop in general. Is refreshing.
No, for sure. Listen, we're all about talking to the people that we feel are impacting the culture, not just the artists, producers, but engineers, managers. It's about understanding and getting under the hood of everything, right? And actually highlighting the contributions to the whole ecosystem. And you're part of that. And it's very important that we do that, because we get so sucked in to trying to chase the quote unquote, the in MC, the in singer, whether it be male or female. We're always trying to chase that, but we forget about the people that make everyone tick, right? The you're only as strong as your team, right? And so we have to also highlight the people behind some of the greatest people in the game and the people making moves, and we've got to highlight the people behind them. So that's what this platform is about. So we appreciate you. Let's start all the way back. What's your start in music, bro? Where did you get started?
Grew up in France, grew up in Brittany, starting, you know, it all started with basketball, man. It was connected. Like, all my teammates were listening to hip hop and stuff. And had like a couple rappers in my hometown, that I would hang out with, started like with French rappers, really. But I've been dreaming of the States since I was, you know, a teenager. And when I first got to meet like some of my idols at shows in France, and then after when I moved to New York, I was already I was a writer for some of the magazines in France, and you know, just slowly got to know people, and New York was, there's like a show every day. There's a DJ set every day. There's like Tony Touch playing there, and tomorrow there's Evil D there, and the next day, oh, Questlove is coming, and then the next day there's DJ Spin at that club, and then, oh yeah, there's a Smith & Wesson show, and you know, and so on. It's like every day, it's the mecca for shows, and you don't have to drive 3 hours like LA to go to a show, you know? You can even catch two shows in one night.
Facts. I mean, I used to do that when I used to go to New York. You would start at like 7 o'clock in the evening, all the way right through to, you know, you'll go to, like you said, you go to maybe Sutra or Toka Tuesdays, and then you go to Mobile Mondays, and then you'll go to all the way to Brooklyn, and then see Q-Tip spinning at some rooftop party. And it's just like, how is this happening? And it's just, it's every day. Like, it's crazy. Yeah. There's always something happening. So no, facts. That's amazing. And so then you got into, so how did you get into tour management then?
Tour management, I'd say like some of the first people that made me realize that I was like good at like, you know, taking care of people, like just like helping, were the Duck Down people that would invite me at shows and be like, you know, basically, can you hold this, or can you like, here's some flyers, can you help, or like, can you do this or carry that? And I was just like, yes, you know, like cats like, you know, Buckshot or Sean Price, or they would just show love, or like Taking Steel. They were the first that would just like take me to some shows, and like my roommate in New York at that time, Emilio Rojas, he had like some dates in the US, and then we had like, he was bubbling at that time, and then we had planned a few dates in Europe, and he was like, well, can you just come with me? So that was like the first run. And at that time I was like, you know, working for Pharrell's brand, building their boys club. I would do shows with NERD or the Clips. Those were my first interaction. That's kind of like, I wouldn't call that being a tour manager. I'm not going to say I knew what I was doing, but I would, you know, hand out water and towels, which are the basics, you know, and order some food and, you know, order pizza and whatever they need, you know. And then after the first proper tours were with Asher Roth, a great friend of mine. And then after, I would book and do everything from the promo to the bookings to the tour management. And that's Freddie Gibbs. And that started 2012. And I'm still Freddie Gibbs tour manager today. And then after, you know, case by case, just working with, like, just like you said, you know, I can work with Freddie Gibbs and I can do a tour with Asher Roth. And then I can do a tour with Wiki. And to me, it's not necessarily about, like, of course, if I hate your music, I'm not going to do it. But if you're a good person and like, if we have like a connection, I don't need to be like, you know, like a fan of what you're doing.
Right.
You've got to be a good person. You've got to be good at what you do. You can be a good performer and a good artist live that I enjoy. And I don't even listen to your music at home, you know? You know, I love JPEG Mafia. Do I listen to him in my living room? Not often. And I love him as a person. And live, this guy is like crazy. And I had no clue what I was getting into, like 2 years ago when I started like my first tour with him. And then we've done four tours together since.
Awesome.
And he's, you know, he wasn't necessarily like the type of guy I would listen to, but that's what's important for me. Just like you said, like there's different kinds of people in the industry and there's like music for everybody, but what's important is human beings, you know.
For sure.
Just be a good person and respect people.
Yeah, I know that about you. You're a vibes person, and I think when it comes to music, and especially in the work you do from Gibbs or Asher Roth or Dom Kennedy or Wiki to Pharrell to Madlib, a lot of that, especially in, you know, you did your internship, right? So handing out the towels and stuff like that with Duck Dynasty, that's almost your internship into what snowballed into, you know, into the successful tour manager, music manager you are today. What would you say then would be, outside of being a good person, what would you say are the other kind of successful traits of a tour manager for people who want to get involved in it? What would you say?
Number one thing, be a good listener, because it's when you're on tour taking care of an artist, it's not about you. You forget about your person. The number one guy is that he's the star of the show. If you think about when you're hungry or when you're tired, then you're in the wrong business. You've got to think about when Freddie's hungry, when he wants to smoke, or when he's trying to go to the club, or when he's tired because he had, like, you know, a long flight. You can't think about like your personal problems, because he has problems too. And this tour, it has his name on the poster. So that's the number one thing. Like, second thing, which is something that I'm not gonna lie, I might have like failed at the beginning. It took me time to understand. And it's very important for anybody who's trying to get into this business. You are not the artist's best friend. And you're the tour manager, and you're you're the tour manager. You're not his friend. You're not a part of his crew. You're not another rapper. You're not a DJ. You're not, like, you're the tour manager. So don't, if they go to the club after the show, or if they get bent, don't get bent. If they smoke or do whatever, don't. Because, like, you've got to stick to the script and stick to your position. Like, who's going to count money at the end of the show? Who's going to, like, if the artist has an issue and he needs to get carried in a Uber or in a van or in the tour bus, like, who's going to take care of that? You. If there's something popping because, you know, I mean, if you're on tour with Freddie Gibbs, it's Gangsta Gibbs.
Yeah.
So you've got to be, like, you know, not on alert all the time, but you've got to, like, be focused on your shit, and you can't be, like, you know, doing some random things or, like,
no, you that I think that's really good advice, bro. That is, like, the friends thing especially, I wasn't expecting that, because I think that goes for a lot of roles in the music business. People want to be friends.
Well, we do too.
Right? Even with us, like, you know, podcasters want to be friends with us. It's not about you. You know, who gives a crap about you trying to be best friends with whoever? Like, it's the same thing, bro. Like, I think that's such sound advice you've given. And I'm so glad you said that, bro.
I've been saying that to Summit a lot behind the scenes. I don't want to be friends with these people. I keep telling him. Not that he wants to be friends. It's just I'm telling him. But anyway, go ahead.
If through the years you develop a friendship with one or two persons, or, like, yes, we can't be friends with everybody.
Good advice.
Air horn. That's what we need right now.
They'll come.
Air horns and gunshots. We need it for that one.
I need air horns or gunshots right now.
Friends. I'm friends with Asher Roth. You know, like, people know that. You know, that's my brother. We were both Sixers fans. We go to tennis matches together. That's my friend. We talk about food, women, traveling. You know, we went on vacation to Rome together. We're good friends. And we talk about anything, but we don't necessarily talk about music, you know. And some guys, you know, once the tour is over, you know, it's like, I barely get a text, you know, once in a while, you know, there's a comment here, or there's like, hey, what's up, bro? Hope you're good. That's it. You know, like, but, you know, and you've got to know that, because a lot of people, they, especially when you get into the business, you know, you've like, oh, wow. Like, and sometimes you live crazy things. There's things that happen that are, like, you know, it's just all smokes and mirrors, you know. And then there's that moment where, you know, there's definitely crazy stories, and you live things with those guys. Being on tour is just on that moment. It can't be forever. I'm not trying to sound bitter, but
it's real. You know, it's real.
I just want to say that I'm not Summit's friend. You talk about friends. He's not my friend. I don't like him. He's not my friend.
Yeah.
We don't go to tennis. No. We ain't been to Rome. It's not happening. He's not my friend. But go ahead.
we went to Rome to watch a football match.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. We went to the Olympic Stadium and I know Summit, I don't know about you, Chris, but I know you like football, so you'll probably like that one where the Olympic Stadium in Rome is huge. It's like 60,000, I think. And it's beautiful. And it was AS Roma against Torino. And we're like, here, Totti was 40. And we're like, we just want to see the guy. You know, he's the legend here. And he's not playing. Fans on strike. like the ultras on strike. So we're like, what is going on here? 1-0, boring match. 85th minute, who comes in? Toti. He scores at the 87th, 1-1. He scores at like the 91st, 2-1.
Wow.
Like we were just like, what just happened? We just got blessed by the gods at 40.
Yeah. Yeah. You listen, so, for those incredible. Who are not aware of Francesco Totti, he is an absolute legend in football. And he has done, he's a one club man. I don't think he ever went
he's
to anywhere.
He's a one club man. He stayed like 20 or 25 years, maybe more in Rome. And he's an absolute legend.
Absolute legend. Man, you got to see Totti. Damn, you got to see Totti.
And it was special because it was like his last season. You know, he was washed and he comes and plays like walking on the pitch like for 5 minutes at the 85th minute, bro. And he scores two. And we're like, and the whole stadium woke up like, wow, such a great memory.
Oh, dope. You're talking about memories and tour stories and, you know, relationships with artists. What is it like? Because, you know, me and Summit, massive fans of Freddie Gibbs and Madlib. Like, I can recall one day we went shopping. Yeah, so he is my friend to some degree because we went shopping, right? So we went shopping and we bought the Pinata album. So I bought it on CD. He bought it on vinyl, same day, like Shitsville. That's the one. We've never seen Freddie Gibbs or Madlib live. Tell me some of your memories from being on the road with them and some of your favorite shows.
Some of my favorite. Otis will never watch the show. Well, he might, but. But
Otis is Madlib, by the way, for our listeners, appearance. Just to let them know.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Madlib might not watch, I don't know. But I guess, I mean, that's his least favorite show probably in his life. And it's also one of my favorite, but I know Freddie liked that show too, where it was the Medicine Tour in 2012. And in Paris, we had a show and it was their first tour together. Madlib doesn't tour that much and he hadn't toured in like a while. And he had that thing called the silence of sound where he was literally mixing silence. I think they did like the forum in London, right? Like on that tour. And in Paris, he's there's J Rock killing it. Like just extremely good DJ. And Madlib comes on and he does his silence of sound set before doing Pinata and with Freddie Gibbs. And Freddie is backstage, you know, chilling, drinking, whatever. And then we hear like blanks, you know, and it was my one of my first shows around with them. And it's like, literally Madlib is playing like samples or songs, and he would put blanks, like literally like 20, 30 second blanks. He would like put them on kind of like on repeat, you know, just like, but for him, I think he's just trying to bless people with the type of music and the rare stuff that he was playing, where people were just like, we want Pinata, we want like a rap show. They didn't expect that, you know? And it was like really for connoisseurs and stuff. And it's like this sample come in and he's just like, I remember all my life, it was saying the girl with the tit out. I couldn't name the artist of the record, but he's like, and then the girl with the tit out, the girl with the tit out. The girl with the tit out. The girl with the tit out. And then he plays another track, you know, same thing. And I guess people were not ready. So they started like booing and going crazy. You know, Parisian crowds are not necessarily the best. They're like really harsh, you know, they're really tough sometimes with anybody. And they just started booing Maleb and just like going crazy. And the promoter like ran backstage and, you know, he was like, panic. He was like, yo, what's going on? Is he drunk? And I was like, no, that's just his concept. You know, this is just, you have a Mad Lib here, you know?
No. And definitely understand. I heard he did something similar in London too. My boy K-Knight told me. But he really enjoyed
it. Yeah, the whole tour. And you can probably go on YouTube and find some cuts of it. And then the promoter came and gave me, and then said, yo, can you send Gibbs out? So we just, I grabbed the mic and I gave it to Freddie. I was like, you would just come out, you know, and just tell him to play some shit. So Freddie came out, and Madlib was so mad that he left that night. So J-Rock was like DJing for Freddie. And then Madlib was just like standing right by, you know, and then, Freddie came out, he just took his shirt off and being like straight up gangster, you know, like, and yeah. And you know, and the crowd lit up, and it was like from like a zero sound atmosphere booing, and Freddie just like hyping him up like crazy. And it was really crazy, from going to like a mean, tough crowd that was like hating or like, you know, and them showing a lot of love and being a good crowd, like reciting lyrics and like doing whatever Freddie was telling them to do, you know, and it ended up being a good show.
It sounds fun. And you know, even if Madlib does bring the silence with him, I have to see Freddie Gibbs and Madlib live before I die. And I won't be bringing Summit because he's not my friend.
It's like great shows. The last tour, the Bandana tour, was amazing too. Where they know each other more now, that there's more of a routine. And also the surprising thing is where Madlib plays, he wants to play other shit than his own production. So most of the time they start with Bandana and then Pinata, then Bandana, and then Madlib will like play some Kenny Beats track from the Freddie album or like some Shadow of a Doubt tracks, you know, from Freddie. And You Only Live Twice.
That's a great,
you know,
album.
And Madlib wants, you know, he wants to see the crowd like, you know, mosh pitting and like, you know, and just going crazy. And I think it's great, you know, that he just wants to play other records.
That's awesome.
Too. Mix.
That's dope.
He adapts to Freddie's versatility. You know?
So let's take it to London. You're working with Lord Apex. He's buzzing. There's a lot of
yes.
I'm hearing lots of good things about Lord Apex. How did you and Lord Apex start your working relationship, and how's it going?
Really great, man. It's been about a year now. Really great. Came up because of our last Freddie and Madlib show in London. At the O2 Kentishtown Forum, late 2000, like October 2019, and then I'm talking shit to one of my friends about British artists after the show. I'm like, yo, see, like, you know, none of your guys could do that shit, you know. And then he's like, you know what, you know, I understand, you know, mate, you know, like, you know, I don't really get into grime or drill, you know, it's like, and he's like, yo, there's a kid in the crowd. He's actually nice. I was like, wait, he was at the show? He's like, yeah. His name, Lord Apex, check him out. So I'm on tour, you know, and I, he's like, yo, check this tape. And my boy Connor, he's like, yo, check this tape. It's called Smoke Sessions. So I check him out. I was like, yo, he's kind of nice, you know? Like, he doesn't sound like typical grime drill of what's cracking right now, but he's also has like a younger touch to it. You know, he's not also like proper UK backpack rap, where he's more into like an Earl sweatshirt,
Mutant Academy like type,
a navy blue vibe. Yeah. I found a lot of like Doom vibes, a lot of Currency vibes, you know. And then also, like, you know, it's no secret. Like I think that his accent is not too strong. And I think he's very Americanized, and he's very inspired by New York rap or just American rap in general. And for that fact, I was like, okay, this is a kid that Americans could get into and be like, okay, yeah, he's British, but I understand everything that he's saying because he's not rapping fast, grime flow, drill flow. And also he's talking about, you know, shit that comes from the US, like shit, like it's not only like UK slang or stuff from London. Like he's like into like vintage clothing and like video games and stuff. And like, I was like, okay, yeah, there's like stuff. I first called him in January last year. I'm like, yo, what's up, man? I'd like to, like, you know, see what you're about. And like, he was working on the mixtape. And I said, like, I can send you some beats for my boy and stuff. And I have a friend in France that make beats. And then he's like, yeah, cool. I was like, you have management? So I can be in touch with your manager? He's like, no. I'm like, you have an agent? He's like, no. I was like, you have anybody? He's like, no, it's just me. I was like, wait, you've done like collars, you've done like those projects, and you've got like millions of streams on your last project, Smoke Session 2, and you just by yourself? He's like, yeah, I do my own merch, I do everything. I'm like, cool, yeah, if you need help, you know. He's like, yeah, for sure. Like, you know, especially with touring, he doesn't do much shows. He was like, I'm not really connected. So that's something maybe. I was like, yo, if I get, you know, ideas, I'll call you back. I get off that phone call and I'm walking into a meeting with Mos Def's agent, Yassine Bey's agent, because I was about to help for the Black on Both Sides anniversary tour. He's like, oh, who are you talking to make me wait for you, you know? I was like, oh, this kid, Lord Apex from London, you know? Nice kid. That's all I say. Next day he calls me back. He's like, yo, me and Mos wants him to open for him on the whole tour. I'm like, bro, I don't even work with him. You know, I'm like, it happened like that. And I call Apex back and I'm like, bro, you should call me back ASAP. You know, he didn't pick up. And then he calls me back. He's like, yeah, what's up, man? Like, what do you want? I was like, oh, would you be interested in going on tour with Mos Def for his 20th anniversary of Black on Both Sides European tour? Sold out shows all over Europe. And then he's like, is this a joke? Like, are you trying to like, where are you trying to lead me? Like, you know? And I'm like, nah, bro. It's like, it's really serious. Like, you know? And then he was like, where, when, you know, I'll pay for my own flights. You know, I was like, you will get paid for it too. You know? And then he was like, ah, oh, bet you ain't playing, you know? And then we started from there. I guess, you know, he appreciated that I was just bringing something on the table right off the bat, opposed to asking for anything and just like, and then we've met like a month later, like like late February last year. It's about a year ago. And we started working together where it was clear, like, you know, if I can do management for you. I went on tour with Wiki in March last year. And then COVID happened. So I called Apex. I'm like, bro, I can't manage you, and let's put in some work, because nothing's about to happen in a while. And you know, if you really trying to do some shit, you know, let's put some thought and more thoughts into what you're about to put out, and then have like more strategic approach on your career. And I've been waiting for that, you know. So we met a second time, and then he was like, oh yeah, you know, like, I gotta tell you, I'm like, I'm emotional sometimes. I'm a Cancer. I'm like, oh yeah, I'm a Cancer too. And then he's like, oh, I'm July 12th. I'm July 4th. He's like my brother. And he was like, all right, that's it. You're my manager, bro. Like, you're the same birthday as my brother. And then, you know, we get along and work together. It's pretty good flow. He's done tremendous progress on any aspect of the game, not only about rapping, just understanding things. I'm really proud of like what we've accomplished, and things came naturally where I think people in general just mess with him. Like whenever I send them music, or, you know, started like with like Carhartt WIP, they were like, yo, we'd like to work with you guys, basically sponsor him and give him a platform. And then my boy V-Don, as producer, who produced for A$AP Rocky, Davies, the Griselda Cats, Jadakiss, and he's like, he's, I think to me, he's the best in the US as discovering new cats, especially from the East Coast, where he was the first to like really give like platforms to like cats, like, you know, Willie the Kid, Ito, you know, a lot of cats. He was doing full albums with them, like, you know, and I think he was the perfect guy to do a project with for Apex, because I told Apex there's two things that I've noticed. Like, there's like a lot of different producers on your projects, and then also you've got to think more of like live performance. And he was also being categorized quite a lot into lo-fi, which was one of the things that he told me, like, yo, I don't like people to put an etiquette on me. I like trap music. I like boom bap. I like, you know, hardcore, like shit, like, you know, heavier beats and stuff. I like all kinds of stuff. And he's a proper head where he's a student. Like he listens to everything. And he loves to discover shit. So I'm able to send him all kinds of stuff. Like, and it's more shit from like the 90s that I listen to, you know, cause I'm like, you know, I'm stuck in the past.
You're not the only one, you know. You're not the only one.
Nah, but you know what? You know, you're not stuck in the past, because you're using all that you've known and learned through the music and through your experience in music to then to actually pass that wisdom on to your artist. And I think that's incredible, bro. And it's, I love the organic nature of how you guys
are. And I'll connected. Also add to that as well. You're not stuck in the past, like Sumit said. You know what you like. And that's absolutely fine.
Yeah.
I think more people need to be comfortable with who they are and the things they like and enjoy life, because it's way too short to do things that you don't want to do.
There's amazing new albums, and like, you know, Alfredo's freaking amazing. There's like crazy albums by like from like post 2000. You know, my favorite is like that 95, 98 era, like even a bit before, like 93, 94. But And there's like new stuff that come out like every day, like sick shit, like, you know, that I get into, of course. But it's like there's a need like of that emotion, and it's like it's very important for me. You know, it's always, you know, maybe it's like the French in me. You know, I always say like, for, you know, people in general, you know, I'm not like all about business. I'd rather have like a good coffee or a good meal with you. Yeah.
Yeah. No. Speaking of connecting with people, we should take a moment because there is another friend of the show, Snips, who you also know. Let's take a moment to talk about DJ Snips. How did you meet Snips? Because I know you guys have a good relationship. So how did you meet him?
Yeah. You know, Snips is like, he was one of the first guys. So I've moved to New York in 2005. Until like 2008, I was working for Pharrell's brand, Vilnia Boys Club and Ice Cream, doing a little bit of things here and there for Star Trek, helping whatever I could. I was still like bubbling and, you know, getting to know people. And then and there was that guy in Brooklyn doing mixtapes and like DJing shows with DJ set named J Ronnie.
Yeah.
And basically my visa papers got fucked up by my manager at Vilnia Boys Club. He filled up one side of the sheet, you know, and only sent that one sign filled up. And when I got the result of like my renewal, they were like denied.
I put hands and feet on that
and
person.
And then when I called, they were like, well, you never filled like half of the information. And I'm like, oh God. And even Pharrell's lawyer couldn't do nothing. So they, I found like, so I got a letter, like within a month, you got to leave the States. And I was like, I can't go back to France. Not now. Like, you know, everybody's like, you know, all my old friends or whatever. I'm not trying, like, even for my parents, like, you know, it seemed like a failure, you know? And I was like, where can I go? You know? So I went to London for 10 months. And then I had no connections. I didn't know nobody. And Geronimo was like, yo, my man, you should connect with my man Snips. I had worked a project with Shabam Sadiq called Relentless and DJ Snips. I was in touch with him on email and stuff. And he had done the mix for that project. And that's also like the beginning of management for me, Shabam Sadiq. And then he was my first connection. And then it was the beginning of like his crew and his party. I'm like, Living Proof was cracking at, it was like around Oxford Circus, that tiny place, Marketplace. Crazy Sweatbox playing all my favorite shit, you know, like best parties I ever been in London, you know. It was amazing. I would go there with Snips like dumb early when nobody's there and leave at the end with him when everybody was gone. And that's how I created a great friendship with Budgie too.
Right.
Khalil, Raj also, you know, much love to them. But like Budgie and Snips, you know, they're my boys, like brothers for life.
Yeah.
So I even took Snips on Freddie's tour. And there's like insane stories and but on like good tip, you know, that I could tell you. I would like to tell one because I think it's more it's more like
positive,
you know. We were in Paris in 2014 on like a 28 dates tour. Freddie would, he was off a run of like a 8 or 9 show in a row, which is crazy. We did our show in Paris, and then promoter of the show, boy Yannick, he's like, yo, there's a private show, a private showcase at David Lynch Club in Paris. David Lynch owns a club called Silencio. It's kind of like Soul House. So you got to have like a card member. It's like $5,000 a year to get in. Like maybe like max 200 capacity in there. And he's like, yo, come through, Mobb Deep is playing. All right, Freddie, want to go to the club? Hell yeah. You know, we would go to a club in Paris, get there, they get us a nice table. Mobb Deep comes out on stage and surprise showcase for VIPs, you know, like it's just models and industry and, you know, actors and just people with money. That probably didn't know like Mobb Deep like that, you know. And then it was what's his name, Ski Beats, DJing for Mobb Deep. So I'm like, whoa, okay. And then they were doing like 3 or 4 songs. They shout out, they see Freddie, they shout him out, and there's like, this is our last song. They play like 4 or 5 songs max, and you're come on stage. So we all go on stage and they play Shook Ones Part 2. So I'm like, Theophilus London was there too. It was like, so that's one of my first encounter with Mobb Deep. So we finished the show, go backstage, have a couple of drinks. I'm like hype, like huge Mobb Deep fan. I'm trying to keep my tour manager. You know, those are the moments where you got to know how, like, not to be a loud mouth, not to be drunk or acting like a goofball, you know?
Right.
Because, like, when Prodigy's like, hey, you want some Henny? You know, you're like, hell yeah. You know, like, what the fuck? You know, like, this is my favorite song. You want to say crazy shit. There's all kinds of things coming through your head. You know, I'm a fan, bro. HNIC, the infamous, you know, like L on Earth, you know, and like, and so we like, you know, we have like, we chilling and shit. They bounce and, you know, Freddie's like, all right, yeah, there's like, it's cracking. It's a club. So, and then we have our own table and we see like a crowd moving, and then there's like 7 or 8 huge, I'm talking like mountain guys, like all like, you know, at least like 6'5" and like huge guys. And they walk through the crowd and everybody's just like what the fuck? Table right next to us, Floyd Mayweather. Shows up just for, because that's the type of club. It's like a private club. Nobody's going to fuck with him. It's not like a club with 2,000 people in there, like random, like nobody's going to. And Freddie's like, yo, like, so Freddie gets in fan mode and he's like, yo, I've got to meet him. And that's when the plug comes in.
See, he's a plug.
So I go see the manager of the club and I'm like, yo, think we can. He's like, yo, he doesn't want to be bothered. It's Floyd Mayweather. Okay. And I know, so in his security, there's this guy Tower. He's like 7-footer monster. Google him. Like, I look like a midget right next to him, and I'm like,
you're tapping his knee.
And I'm like, and I take the strongest French accent I can. I'm like,
right.
Excuse me, I work for Silencio Club. I'm the manager here.
Wow. You know,
and I have a good client here named Freddie Gibbs that wants to meet Floyd. I didn't say I was working for Freddie Gibbs. He would be like,
pfft. Right, right, right.
And then he was like, let me ask him. And Floyd, he was like, he knew him. So he's like, yo, come over to my table. And we end up at fucking Floyd Mayweather table drinking and shit. And it's like, and just, you know, Freddie ends up like drunk and it's just, you know, and yeah, and to finish that thing, his phone died. So Freddie was like, pass me your phone. And he gave my phone to Floyd. Floyd put his number. I don't know if that number is still in, but I have Floyd Mayweather's number in my phone.
So that's crazy. Mobb Deep to Floyd Mayweather. That's insane.
Bro, from a great show from Freddie to go into an after party that we didn't know. And then he tells us like, oh yeah, it's a surprise Mobb Deep show. That I was already cool with that. And then we get like VIP treatment. Like they give us a table. Ski Beats is there. Like I fucking love Ski Beats. We get to meet the guys and talk to them. Like it was literally like no entourage, no. It was like four of us, Freddie's crew, and literally four of them in Mobb Deep's crew. And it was like one manager, Prodigy, Havoc, Ski Beats.
It's very random, just Mobb Deep performing in a very high-rated establishment.
They had a show the next day in a huge venue in Paris.
Makes sense.
Paris.
All right.
And they were there the day before. They had a show the next day at a huge venue. I think it was Bataclan or something like that. And then they were getting a quick check. You know, the
I don't blame
before,
them at all.
And it's like one of my best memory with Freddie, you know? And you know, I'm not gonna lie. I had a couple of drinks.
Yeah,
that
you
night.
Deserve it, man.
As you should, as you should.
Just cause you're like, I mean, you know, you're at the club and stuff and then you're just having fun, you know, but still, like, I still had to, you know, getting in and get him in the van and get him back to the hotel because the next day we were going to another city, you know. But yeah, that's like fun stories, and there's like so many unexpected one. Another super unexpected one was Dizzy Rascal wanting to come to Dom Kennedy's show at XOYO.
Right.
Dom's first show in London, and my friend's like, yo, can I give your number to Dizzy Rascal? He's trying to come with like seven people. And I'm like, what the fuck? Yeah, so I put him on the list, and the guy texts me like, yo, I'm at the door, like, you know.
That's actually so random.
XOYO has a backstage smaller than my bathroom. You know, and then he's like, yo, let's go to my crib. I'm like, yeah. I'm like, Dom, you won't. Dom didn't know Dizzy Rascal. of course I know Dizzy Rascal, you know. And it was like 2013, so it's still like, you know, very, very relevant, like, you know. And then he was like, yo, let's go to my crib after. It's a bit far. I got to let you know. And he lives in like Kent or something. And in the middle of nowhere. And then he puts us in a van. Like he got us like a private van with a driver and shit. Like really like class treatment, you know. And then we arrive in the boonies, like in the middle of a forest. It's like just his crib, with like fucking Ferraris all over, Lambos and shit, like, and has like pool and all kinds of crazy shit. It has a studio, and then he's trying to do a song with them, and he's like, yo, you know, and I was 100% sure, and you know, Dom might watch this, but he's still an idiot for not doing it. You know, I was like, yo, this is Dizzy Rascal, bro. Like, he's literally like selling millions, you know, like, and Dom was like, nah, man, I'm just trying to, like, very cool guy, you know, just trying to have a drink after the show, you know, chilling, you know, this guy is like welcoming us, like really cool. And then Dizzy was like, yo, let's get something. And after he was like, yo, you think I love my type of party? You know, you think we could do a UK remix maybe? I was like, Dom, if you do this, you will fucking blow up here, you know? He was like, nah, I'm not even here to rap, like, to do anything. I'm like, damn. Like,
wow.
And like 3 or 4 in the morning, random as fuck, but I guess Dizzy had texted him, Tiny Tempa comes. And that's when Tiny Tempa is like number one, bro.
Pass out Tiny Tempa.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tiny Tempa shows up at Dizzy's crib and he's like, yo, I'm the biggest fan, bro. Let's do my type of party remix with Dizzy. Let's do it now. And Dom is like, nah. Can we do a track? Nah. Nothing.
Mate.
I respect the decision.
He was just there like, I'm just chilling.
I understand it. Look, I understand it.
We love Dom. We love Dom over here, but he should have done it. Yeah,
he should have done it, bro. He should have heeded the advice of the plug. And he should have done it.
He should have obeyed the vibe.
You have.
Dizzy was a big fan. And he's a big Freddie fan too. He showed up at a couple of Freddie shows.
What's really interesting about that though is sometimes, you know, you look at certain artists and they've got fans that you wouldn't necessarily expect. Like, I would have never picked Dom Kennedy to be someone that Dizzy Rascal was a fan of. Like, I just wouldn't have put the two together. And I think that's an amazing story.
Yeah, and I mean, my type of party was cracking. The Yellow Album, bro, has Kendrick, has Rick Ross on it. It has, you know, it's Dom was like top independent artist and cracking. And that's like before TDE. J-Rock was there, but Kendrick wasn't there. Schoolboy wasn't there. Nipsey was like, you know, starting to make noise and shit, but you know, Dom had like a couple tapes and like
he had a moment. I remember the moment.
Yeah, my type of party was huge. So, yes. But yeah, and unexpected, you know, it was a good night.
Definitely Dom should have done it.
I don't think I've ever seen Dizzy since, you know.
Listen, he can't escape the Jedi plug. That's the thing. That's the thing about you, Mac.
We'll cross path one day.
Absolutely. Again. Listen, bro, you've been incredible for us, bro. We've really enjoyed the stories and your time. You're the plug now. I'm locking you in as the plug.
I had the name of this episode in my head already, and this whole plug thing took over, so that's going to be the name of the episode.
Nah, it's Max, man. It's Max, the plug. He's the plug. I'm so glad you mentioned all these stories and talked through the advice, because you've given a real holistic view of not only your journey, but what it takes to stay in this business and do it well, right? Because the thing about it is a lot of people are assholes.
Yeah.
That can't be said for you. And also, you've got the talent and the know-how, and you're doing that. You're doing that with Apex. You've done it your whole career, and I think that's a wonderful thing. And so, I'm so glad that you've highlighted those stories, bro, because it really shows.
Thank you. It's just try not to force things in general. You know, it's like a lot of people, they're just so eager to bypass some steps. You know, and sometimes, I mean, it works for some people, you know, being an asshole and stepping on top of each other, for me, it's a different type of thing. You know, if I'm content with like what I've achieved and like the career and stuff that I've done, the people that I've worked with, you know, that matters above everything. That's why, like, you know, relationships, you know, they matter more to me. And you know, if Buckshot or if Sean Price was alive and tell me that you want to come on tour with me, I'm not gonna say, yo, Freddie is cracking right now. Him and Alchemist got the album of the year. Him and Madlib got the album of the year, bro. I don't got time for you. You know, yeah. I don't got time for you, Asheroth. Mm. You know, it's not 2009 anymore, bro. Like,
that's not who you are, bro.
Hell fucking no. Like, yeah. I'm going on tour with you. You know, I'm going to do it because that's what matters.
Yeah. That's also a testament to your longevity, bro. And will be, you got to remember, that's a testament to your longevity, bro.
Yeah, and then it goes for everybody. You know, when I go on tour, one of the first things that I say to Entourage, I think artists know that, but like Entourage, I'm like, yo, say hi to everybody, say goodbye and thank you to everybody, shake hands from the fucking, you know, guy sweeping, mopping the floor before and after the show to the bartender or your sound man and it goes a long way, and you never know who these kids gonna be. Like the opener or the opener might become somebody, you know. Macklemore was opening for Strong Arm Steady, who I was working with, who were the opener of Talib Kweli. You understand?
Mm-hmm.
Like Macklemore was opening for Strong Arm Steady, who was the opener of Talib Kweli. Macklemore sold 64 million singles of
Thrift Shop.
Mm-hmm. And 32 million of, you know, like the other
same love, you know.
Yeah, he's a multi-platinum. His the second went gold, and his last one went gold again, or it might have went platinum, the Gemini one, the last one. You've got to respect that.
Yeah, you know? Facts.
What?
Facts.
Like his first few projects, and Macklemore is like on some boom bap shit, rap shit. So you never know. You never know who might make it super uber big.
Mm.
And you might think some guys got it, and then a few years later, you know, they're back to like, you know, being like super underground, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So. We've seen it happen so many times. You're 100% right. We've seen it happen so many times.
Now, I appreciate you, bro. We appreciate
you. Thank you so much for your time, man. We appreciate
it. Thank you, man. Like, thank you for doing what you guys are doing, because, like, it's just, like, you know, making history and, like, you know, recording it, you know, all these stories. And like, I watched the OC one. He's one of my favorite MC.
Come on now.
You know, like,
same.
One of my like favorite performers too. And that guy never stops. Like, all these things, they're like very, 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 very necessary.
Appreciate you, bro.
Man. Yeah, we appreciate you. And when you come to London, we got to play some basketball.
Please. Yeah. Definitely.
Because I'm not on this football thing, but I'm on the basketball thing.
Hey, you know, I used to play ball. I used to play college, bro. I played D1 in France.
That's cool. You can beat me. That's fine. Yeah. I'm coming outside. I'm outside. I'm outside.
Yeah, man. Yeah, definitely.
Let's do
definitely.
It.
And then I'll tell you some more stories.
No, love to.
Because I've got
them all, bro. You the plug, bro. You the plug, bro. You
when you come to London, we'll, you know, if Snips is around, we'll all have a powwow and celebrate and share some war stories.
Yeah, man, definitely. Definitely.
Thank you, brother.
All right, man. Thank you so much for your time. Peace.
Big thanks to Max all the way in France. Tuning up, bro. He's an hour ahead, bro. He just spent all that time with us on this fine evening.
In Toulouse, and in Toulouse.
Yeah, but to speak to Toulouse is like us, right?
Man's winning in two lose.
Come on, man. Come
double
on,
entendre.
Man. Come on, man.
Come on now. Yeah, winning in two lose.
Bruv, when we talk about entendre, then only speak about Hove, innit?
No, don't do that, that because I rap too, innit? Don't do that.
You got a new song coming out
tomorrow,
right?
Bro. It's the first song I recorded in my house. Parts Unknown. That's the name of my little studio.
Wow.
So it's a song with A1 from A1 on Phonics. Shout out to A1, friend of the show. He was on the show. We connected. We spoke, and he said to me, "You know, we're long overdue to do a song," and we did it.
Amazing. The first of many,
it's
right?
It's going to be the first of many. And, you know, it's one of those things that was meant to happen because he's in a duo. Me and Imperial are in a duo. And, you know, message boards and SoundCloud comments, like, over the years, it's been, A1 and Phonics, you know, should do a song with Imperial and Kinetic and vice versa. And they're familiar with us and we're familiar with them. So we're fans of each other. And I think that's the most important thing. So, yeah, shout out to A1. And hopefully, fingers crossed, there's going to be a Phonics remix of said song.
Excellent. That's dope. But yeah, this is a great episode we've had with Max. Really insightful. The thing that sticks out to me is don't try to be friends.
Yeah, I tell you every day, bro. I ain't trying to be friends with these, man. I ain't trying to be friends with you.
You ain't trying to be friends with me. This is true.
I ain't trying to be friends with you. When you call me,
I know
who's on the podcast. Safe. Speak later.
Yeah, that's my job at the moment. Man. It's just like, I'm booking this.
Beat it.
Turn up.
Well, get some people, man. Beat it.
Nah. But look, honestly, appreciate Max for his time. We're gonna hear those stories that he told us. Those tour stories are incredible reference points.
He needs a part two.
Yes.
I want to share one thing though that really stood out to me from what he was saying, and I think as a young creative, oftentimes we look at the people who are at the forefront, so the rappers and the singers. And I want to encourage all the young listeners out there that this entertainment industry, whether it's music, movies, fashion, whatever, it's a massive ecosystem and there's so many different things that you can do that bring value and can generate income for yourself. So you don't have to be the rapper. You don't have to be the singer. You can be the tour manager like Max. You can be the radio DJ like Big Hoss. There's so many different things you can do to add value, and you get, you know, you might develop new skills and you might just find something new that you enjoy and you're passionate about. So keep an open mind and try different things, man. There's so many things out there for us and you to do.
Absolutely. And that is well said. I'm not gonna say much more, but just plug the socials. You can find us at Break the Atoms, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram.
You sure you want to do this?
Yeah, fuck the socials. That'll be the new thing, I think. Chris's personal is I Am Kinetic. Mine is at Hip Hop Chronicle. We appreciate all the listeners, as always, for rocking with us. If you're new, welcome. If you've been with us since day one, peace and love.
Safe.
Yeah, safe. Yeah, safe.
To everyone listening, isn't it? Safe.
But no, we appreciate each and every one of you from wherever you are, from all the corners of the globe. We'll be back with more episodes. Until next time, peace.
Peace.